and welcome to Chaos Considered, where we consider our weird, wacky, wonderful world and share the burden of knowledge. My name is Emily Roberts.
I'm Claire Middicky.
Claire, can I tell you, I have had a morning.
Please do.
Okay. I got stuck in the elevator this morning.
Oh, no.
And I thought, this is it. This is where I live now. This elevator is my home.
Were you stuck in it with another person?
No, thank God.
No, see, now I was hoping for a meet cute, but I guess we don't get to have that this morning.
No, no meet cutes. Only getting stuck in your building's elevator. But the thing was that, like, only one of the doors opened. I don't know what happened, but this old couple on floor 22 called it. And so I was able to get out and be like, don't go in that elevator.
Good. Good, but traumatic, I would say.
Good, but traumatic. So I get back into another elevator. Don't get trapped. I go to Target. I'm trying on clothes in Target. I get my first ever nosebleed, half naked, in a Target dressing room, trying on white tops.
I'm so sorry. Your first ever nosebleed?
Yeah.
How old are you?
23. Come at me, bro.
How you, this old 23-year-old, old man.
Yeah.
One foot in the grave, Emily Roberts. Yeah. How is it possible that this is your first nosebleed?
Most of my body bad. So in the normal ways, it's good. You know, balance.
It's like so the balance for your body being trash, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
No nosebleeds.
Like, I don't get nosebleeds or allergies, but I do have, like, extra bones. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the challenging balance that is
my body.
Your body. Okay.
Some people are gonna be like, "That's a bit." It's not, folks. I had an extra bone cut out of my body.
Love her.
My body and
you didn't
bad.
You did not get to keep her.
I wanted to. I was so mad that they wouldn't let me keep her. I was gonna get it cleaned and I was gonna turn it into a necklace. And then when people were like, "Where'd you get that?" I would be like, "I grew it."
At this point, it's like that. That's like thievery. Yes.
Well, the doctors were like, "It's medical waste, so we have to like incinerate it or whatever." And I'm like, man.
No, they're just stealing.
They're just stealing it. You know what?
I grew that my body.
I bet the doctor secretly has a collection of weird little bones that he's cut out of people in his house. Just in a jar. Yes. That feels like a jar collection. You know what I mean?
Rattling a jar around. Collection, like, but like tasteful, like aesthetic.
Honestly, some 21-year-old Tumblr blog person has a jar of bones.
Yes. And I wish, oh God, I wish that were me.
I wish that were me too. Am I too old to just start collecting like dead animals?
No. My parents have proved. My parents have proved. At the age of, it was 64 at the time. They proved it's never too late to start collecting bones. And they gave us some of the random bones that they found on a hike. So we have a turtle shell and just a random assortment of just bones that we don't know what they exactly belong to. Probs not human, but they definitely like sun bleached them, cleaned them. They did something. And they haven't even decorated yet. They just kind of kept them in a bag.
If you told me, "Hey, I found out that my parents were secretly murderers," I'd be like, okay, I could see it. Because they are the nicest people, and I inherently am scared of nice people.
Yeah, they're so kind. They're so generous. They're lovely, lovely people. But then they do things like this.
And you're like, You're like, or like, if you told me that like they had like killed a bunch of people when they were young and now they're just like a happily married, very kind and loving older Christian couple and that's just their thing, I've been like, this all checks out.
This all lines up. This the facts align. The stars align.
Yeah.
The universe is in order. This, yeah. No, I would agree.
Yeah.
There was like a hot period of time where most of my friends were like, how sure are we that your dad's not in the mafia? And mind you, such a kind man.
He had
so generous.
A prayer dungeon.
Did have a prayer dungeon.
He had, and like, folks, that's also not a bit. He had a dark, creepy little room with like hewn stone walls in his basement where he would go to just talk to Jesus. And it's like, listen, you can meet Jesus anywhere else. The prerequisite is not a dungeon. This is some D&D.
Every time I showed my friends into like my beautiful home, we'd be like, do, ignore that. That's haunted. And they'd be like, what is it? I'm like, we're going to walk by it. And all of them would pivot and go into the dungeon.
Me
and
included.
And then I had to say goodbye to them because I've already mourned you.
Yeah. My soul's
gone. Because now you're possessed. So
it makes so much sense.
My memory is a garbage can, but I have this very distinct memory of being in a road trip, having this book about, was it Madeline, the girl with like, she had a little yellow dress on?
Yes.
I had a book with Madeline, whatever, and I have this very strong memory of just like looking down at this beautiful library book and just seeing drops of blood drop down onto it.
And now the contract has been sealed.
Now the blood oath has been completed. That's a core concept in the book. Only if you've read the Madeline books would you get that reference. A lot of it revolves around witchcraft.
Yeah. Satan.
Satanism.
Yeah.
Satan, devils, and the Madeline kids book. So
that would be, can I just say, as someone who plays Dungeons and Dragons, that does seem like both the worst and best character, which is I accidentally became a warlock because I was studying this evil like book contract and got a nosebleed on it. And so now that my blood has touched it, I am in this binding contract.
Because I got a nosebleed. Because I got a nosebleed. What are you, just like a humble researcher?
Yeah. And you're like, I really need a good lawyer. You're like, my quest is for a really good lawyer so I can get out of this contract.
Dude, honestly, I'm writing down notes as we speak. Like, that sounds...
Next character. You're
next
on
character.
It.
Yeah. I will play that.
All right, Claire. Don't question. I feel like it's time.
The time has come. Oh, the but what if... Come. Controversial opinion.
Oh.
What if I'm not ready?
Claire, controversial truth, you're never ready.
Heard, accepted, is now one of my personal truths now. All right, okay, continue.
Claire, we're talking today about something that I learned about when I was in college. And I'm going to preface this saying we could get really deep into this subject. It's a very complicated subject, but I'm, for the sake of time, and also because I'm not a scientist, we're not going to get deep into it. But it has put some deep fear in me. And I want to share that with you, with everybody, but we're going to keep it light. We're going to keep it light.
Oh, you're going to share fear with me?
I'm going to share fear. And we're going to talk about some geology because the planet Earth, terrifying. Like, I don't like the ocean. I'm scared of this planet. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Every new thing we find is spooky.
All right. Claire, have you heard of the Cascadia subduction zone?
Hey brethren, I have not, and I'm not loving the way the mouthfeel of that statement.
Yeah. So backstory, I learned about this in my Geology of National Parks class, which was a very 100% real class that I took as a humanities major, because I got my AP, you know, real science out of the way in college, sorry, not in college, in high school. So I was like, senior year, living large. I need a science credit. I'm going to take geology of national parks. And
cute.
Thank you.
That you're like, who's a rock girl? I am.
I could take geology, or I could take geology of national parks.
Is that the one where you studied like gemstones?
No, that was my other science credit, which was a class on gemstones.
You just had a class about gemstones, which I think is bonkers. Also, like growing up, not to derail us, were you a rock girl?
I'm still a rock girl.
Because I remember, I still have the rocks that I used to collect. I used to like walk down these like streams with my mom, and I would just pick up an uncomfortable amount of rocks. Like I would have a handful of buckets that I would fill with rocks that like I enjoyed and thought were pretty. And then I would take them home. And then I just had an increasing pile of rocks that I kept in a giant like bag.
All right. So we're going to start, right? The Earth's core is a bunch of molten earth. And yes. We are just surfboarding on top of it.
Yeah. Catching those waves.
The surfboards, those are tectonic plates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Continue,
right? So they're just big, cool-down hunks of rock floating on molten rock, moving around very, very slowly. And sometimes while they're floating, they run into each other. And by sometimes, I mean all the time, constantly. And when they collide, they do fun stuff like make mountains.
Love that.
We get like Alaska. Alaska's just a little bunch of plates shoved into the mainland.
Frowning. Sorry, this is an auditory medium. I'm frowning, but like intensely. I'm aggressively frowning.
And sometimes they do not fun stuff like cause earthquakes.
Okay, yeah.
All right. We're talking about the Cascadia subduction zone. And again, I cannot underscore how basic of an explanation this is. And this stuff is a lot more complicated. But you got lots of plates. You get oceanic plates. You got continental plates. And they're rubbing around. And they're moving around and bumping and grinding and being nasty.
I don't like the energy you're bringing to the rock conversation.
Well, doesn't matter. So the Cascadia subduction zone is 700 miles long, and it is a fault. Do you know what a fault is, Claire?
I was going to pretend. I'm getting my faults and my fissures confused, I think.
Well, faults are kind of just places where these sort of plates and plate bits kind of meet. Because the Earth is moving apart. So, like, places where the Earth is moving together or apart or side by side. Sometimes it's rubbing. Sometimes it's pushing together. Sometimes it's pulling apart. All of those places.
Sometimes it's bumping, sometimes it's grinding.
All of those places are faults. So the Cascadia subduction zone is a 700-mile-long fault. So it is all along the northwest edge of North America. So we're talking Vancouver. We're talking Portland. Baby. We're talking Seattle. We're talking the very, very north of California. Right?
Yeah. I'm tracking.
So, do you know what faults cause?
Earthquakes.
Yes.
Ah!
Faults cause earthquakes. Yes,
oh,
queen.
I'm so happy. Thanks.
Wow. So we have a giant fault, 700 miles long, caused by an oceanic plate, right? Plates are floating. We got one surfboard. It is being shoved under the continental plate of North America, right?
Okay.
So all that's, and it's, okay, it's called a mega thrust fault.
Now, come on now, y'all, those scientists, we allow those scientists to get away with so much.
We do.
Who do we have to stop these scientists? Who do I call? Their moms? Give me the scientists who named it. Give me their mom's name. I'm calling them.
Well, because there are thrust faults, but this is a big one.
I'm reporting them. to the authorities.
The FBI are already watching, and I'm letting them know. I'm waving them down. I'm like, okay, guys, I'm holding a sign up to my window saying, hey. So we have a megathrust fault, a 700-mile-long megathrust fault, where this oceanic plate is going underneath this continental plate, and it's just rubbing. It's just making a little rubbing. It's getting stressed out. It's getting stressed out. It's rubbing. It's building up energy. It's rubbing. Okay. It's rubbing. It's rubbing. It's rubbing. It's
I don't like this new right song now. That you're
right doing. Now. Right now, Cascade Seduction Zone's just rubbing away. Rubbing away. Getting pushed around. And, like, that's how earthquakes are caused. Because eventually that energy has to be released. And that's how we get earthquakes.
Yeah.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a fun fact. Here's a fun fact.
You say it like it's not going to be a fun fact.
As it turns out, subduction zone faults are the only faults capable of producing greater than 8.5 earthquakes.
Cute.
Cute.
Cute. So,
the Cascadia subduction zone has produced even greater earthquakes. We're talking 9.0 and above, baby. So I know what you're thinking. How do we measure earthquakes? Because I was like, I'm going to dig deep into this because I just don't really know how earthquake measurements work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think they work, Claire?
I thought that there was like a bunch of scientists who had like a little cute little fancy instrument and they're like, oh man, that really, I'm feeling the ground and it did a rumble and that's how much it rumbled. And like, that's how they measured it.
Like, that's basically it. But I want to say this, and this is something that I learned that makes me upset. So when we say like a 1.0 or a 2.0, it is not like a scale from 1 to 10. So here's how it works. So a magnitude 1 earthquake is a little baby earthquake. Scientists have just, they've found one earthquake that they've measured and they're like, this is the standard earthquake, this is 1. So technically earthquakes can be lower than 1. But magnitude 1 is just a baby quake. They happen all the time. We can't even feel them. They're just, you know, the earth's bumping and grinding. She's shifting. You know, she's getting wedgies. She's moving them around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a magnitude 2 earthquake is 10 times stronger than a magnitude 1.
Okay.
And a magnitude 3 earthquake is 10 times stronger than a magnitude 2. Are you with me? So it grows. So if you think about it then, a magnitude 9 earthquake is 10 times stronger than a magnitude 8 earthquake.
Okay.
So if you actually look at it, and I did like a little bit of a deep dive into Wikipedia, like into the largest earthquakes, I think like, in recent history, like one of the most devastating earthquakes, the last, like, it wasn't the last 9.0, but if you remember in Japan when the like nuclear plant, that was all caused by a 9.0 earthquake. And if you look at it, you get like 8.0 earthquakes. They cause billions of dollars in damage. Usually like hundreds of people die. And then you look at 9.0 earthquakes and it's like, tens of thousands of people die. Like,
yeah, okay.
They are devastating. Yeah. Right? So, again, we're going to remind you that there is a 700-mile-long fault running along the Pacific Northwest with all of these major seaboard cities that is capable of producing 9.0 or greater earthquakes.
Awesome.
Wait a second. But wait, there's
more. But wait,
more.
There's more. Oh, no.
Because you don't need to be worried about the earthquake, Claire. You need to be worried about tsunamis. Because the ocean. This is a fault line underneath the ocean.
Oh.
So if there is a, if, so when, because not even if, when the Cascadia subduction zone has an earthquake, it will create tsunami that will hit the entire, like, everyone lining the Pacific. It will hit Hawaii. It will hit Japan. It will hit, like, all of that will be hit by a tsunami. It'll be hit by a major tsunami.
I was going to be like, but it's a really small baby tsunami. Like, don't even sweat it. It's just really easy going.
Apparently, I learned that tsunamis can, like, move as fast as or faster than, like, jet planes. So that's something that I learned. So there would also be a very short window. And a lot of these countries, like, you know, like Japan, like, they're prepared for tsunamis. And, like, really, like, the tsunami, again, when Japan had their 9.0 earthquake back in the mid-2000s, the big damage came from the tsunami that hit. So most of these countries can predict tsunamis because they have the earthquake first. And you know there's a certain amount of time before the tsunami hits.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So the real question is, how do we know this happened? Because it has happened, and it will happen again. So,
I didn't even think about that.
When was the last time the Cascadia subduction zone had an earthquake?
10,000 years ago.
300 years ago.
That's too soon.
In 1700, an orphan tsunami hit the coast of Japan.
An orphan?
So, basically, these people in Japan, all of a sudden a tsunami hits. Normally they would have an earthquake or something that would tell them, oh, hey, a tsunami's going to hit. This tsunami came out of nowhere.
Is that why it's called an orphan tsunami? That's such a cool name! Sorry, continue.
And basically, we have reports dated from, like, very specifically in January of 1700 from Japan. And we know it was caused by the Cascadia subduction zone because Native American oral tradition has a story of all of these Native Americans that lived along the coast who got wiped out by this giant wave in the middle of the night.
That's awful.
But also kind of cool.
Super cool that they were able to piece that together.
Yeah, and they also, like, they use data, like, drowned trees, because basically the coast dropped 36 feet, and it drowned.
Oh no, that's a good old fashioned drop right there.
9.0 earthquake, sis. Like, it will, I don't want to say destroy the Pacific Northwest, because I feel like that's a little fear mongering, but it will cause irreparable damage to the Pacific Northwest, because they, unlike places like California, don't prep for earthquakes. You know what I mean? That's, like, not on their radar. Well, it is on their radar because a lot of this information came from, like, emergency preparedness for, like, states of Oregon and Washington. But also, I live in fear of when the Cascadia subduction zone is going to erupt again. Because guess how often it does?
Every 10,000 years.
Every 400 to 700 years, the Cascadia subduction zone has a giant earthquake. So, it probably won't happen in our lifetimes, but could happen in our children's lifetimes, and probably definitely will maybe happen in our grandchildren's lifetimes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I have one fear, and that, well, that's a lie. I have many fears, but one particular fear that I now have, thanks to this geology class, is, you know, a giant earthquake devastating the Pacific Northwest.
That's a pretty legitimate fear, can I tell you? I can tell you that's a pretty legitimate fear.
And not even devastating the Pacific Northwest. Devastating the Pacific Northwest and then Hawaii and pretty much everyone around the Pacific Ring. All those countries are going to get hit by huge tsunamis.
Dang, dude.
So, now you have to know this too. So now every time you go traveling to Portland or whatever, or someone's like, you should move to Portland, you can think, this thing's going to get wrecked in a couple hundo. So, I don't know, guys.
I'm going to choose another location besides this one, the bad, the possible bad location.
The Midwest is boring. There's nothing here.
True.
But it's also not going to be destroyed by a 9.0 earthquake followed by a giant tsunami.
And that's a really great thing we got going for us.
What do you have for me, Claire? Because I feel like a lot of people are going to, you know, apologies if you live in the Pacific Northwest. You'll probably be fine.
I mean, honestly, at this point, apologies if you live anywhere on planet Earth, because big rough.
Climate change will destroy the environment long before the Cascadia subduction zone has an earthquake again.
Emily! Just let me talk about turtles.
Minnesota's the only place that's getting colder.
Just let me talk about turtles, Emily.
Turtles in my house? Absolutely not.
More likely than you would think, Emily. God. So, specifically, what I'm talking about today is turtle hibernation. We're getting specific. Oh, I got it.
Specific.
I really had to just hone in. Do some, like, echolocation and, like, find the word specific.
Your brain stopped working.
Oh, fully stopped. So, okay, we're talking about hibernation. We're talking specifically about turtle hibernation. I'm mainly going to talk about my freshwater turtles. But before we take a stop there, I would like to talk about my box turtle friends, okay? So kind, so gentle, so sweet. So turtles are ectotherms, which means that like they rely on an external source of heat. So when it's cold outside, them turtles are going to be cold. That's just how the world works. It's fine. Freshwater turtles, they like can't survive freezing temperatures, and they can't survive having any like ice crystals in them.
So not frogs.
So not frogs.
They haven't gotten to that frog level yet where they just freeze most of
the time. No, they're not in, they can't float with that. On the other hand, box turtles can survive. What percentage of their body do you think box turtles can survive being frozen?
I'm going to say that maybe they're going to beat frogs. Maybe it's going to be like,
no.
Oh, 50?
Probably not. 58%.
58%. Iconic. So, that's more than many.
Iconic. Iconic. Box turtles coming in with that iconic.
Nematodes are like 100. 48. We got frogs at 70. We got box turtles 58.
Box turtles doing their best.
Box turtles are third, but I still love them.
They are the largest animal that can be frozen like that and still be like chilling.
See? Nice.
That's what they got going for them.
Yeah.
And they can survive with the data that I saw was 58% of their body being frozen, body water being frozen, for like 43 hours without any problem. So I don't know what their cooling and thawing looks like, but that's the little data entry that I saw.
Is it like once you take it out of the freezer, you can't put it back in because it's just going to get mushy?
I have to assume no, because temperature fluctuates.
Yeah, they must be able to refreeze. It must be an yes. Ice cream situation.
Though sometimes ice cream refreeze is weird.
Well, you know, maybe after like the 100th time they refreeze, the turtle's just not the same anymore.
To me, it feels right.
That feels very right.
That feels right too. That's not based on any science and or any facts, but that just feels...
Knowing my body, like... If I do anything 100 times, she's just not the same anymore.
She has fundamentally changed.
Broken, some might say.
And I would say that's probably the same. Did you know that I very illegally, and I don't recommend it, you're not supposed to do it, and the police are coming for me as I say this?
All right, I'm going to close my blinds so the FBI can't hear you say
can't
this.
Hear?
Yeah, can't hear. They can't hear what they can't see. That's science, sis.
That's science, baby. I did, my family did allow me to keep a box turtle outside for like a year. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that. Yeah. It's bad and it's not good for turtles, which I found out as an adult. But I did have a very beautiful experience with it where, like, I named it Eyelash, and then we released it back where we found it, which we should have done in the first place. But you live and you learn, I guess.
The fact that you named a turtle Eyelash is the most on-brand Claire Mitigan thing that you've told me in this entire podcast. And we talked about how your dad had a prayer dungeon.
I loved Eyelash. Eyelash was great. Actually, Eyelash ended up coming back. And we had to be like, this is not an environment that's sustainable for you, my friend. We're going to have to take you back to where we found you originally. And then I never saw Eyelash again.
See, you have this beautiful relationship with this, like, box turtle. And I'm like, one time I picked up a snapping turtle and helped it cross the road.
That's, no, but this is the thing, is you did what you're supposed to do. We did the wrong thing that's probably bad for
a fun fact about snapping turtles.
Please.
Most turtles, they have the shell plate go all the way down their belly. So when you pick them up, it's all hard. Snapping turtles have it go only halfway down. So I picked up a turtle like you're supposed to, which is bottom of the shell, you know, holding the bottom and pinching it on top.
As we all know,
don't pick them up by their tail or anything. That's bad for them. But it's all just soft flesh under there.
Oh, I hate that so much.
It was just the squishiest, coldest thing. And I was hustling because this snapping turtle was like, I'm going to eat you. And I'm like, sis, maybe you shouldn't be in the middle of the road. Okay?
It's like, I'm going to retaliate. It's like, well, I'm saving your life.
Yeah.
I thought about that.
Texturally, not good. Bad flesh.
Texturally, hand feel.
Hand feel bad.
Unimaginably awful. I can only imagine.
Because I've helped turtles cross the road before, but the snapping turtle, and it was, snapping turtles are big, by the way. It was a sizable, it was like a small dog. I was like, okay, sis.
I don't mess with snapping turtles. Are you kidding me?
I felt bad because, well, I tried to poke her along. I tried to give her a little nudge with my foot along the back end, just to maybe spook her.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want to touch this thing because it can bite me and hurt. But then she wasn't moving, and I knew that, like, semis and stuff rolled by on that road. And I was like, you're going to get pancaked, sis.
You got to save her.
Got to save
her. And poke in the butt just ain't working right now.
I'm not saying that I'm a hero. But if, when I die, a bunch of turtles come and give me, like, a 7-gun salute, you know what I did.
You know what I've done. You know the impact that I've left on this earth. The story I've woven with my turtle friends.
But yes, help turtles across the road the way they were going. They know where they want to be.
Yes. Which is apparently crossing the road. Why? That's not our business.
To lay eggs.
Yeah. Probably correct.
Yes.
Okay. Enough about your beautiful story.
My beautiful story where I almost got bitten by a snapping turtle.
You almost got a little bit murdered, but that's okay. So, let's move on to my freshwater turtle friends. So, I saw that they can survive about 100 days underwater. Just totally underwater, kicking it.
Like, too long.
Right? Right. You're doing a vibe check and you say, that seems like too long without any oxygen, yeah?
Yeah.
So, what was true for, apparently, what I did my little research on, what was true for all freshwater turtles is they choose to hibernate in wetland conditions that are just above freezing. When they're under the ice, they're moving about, they're hanging out. They tend to hibernate in groups, and they tend to return to the same place to hibernate every time.
Cute.
Which is chill, which is very cute. So the reason why they choose the water is because it takes a lot more energy to freeze water or decrease the water's temperature versus, like, outside where the air is just fluctuating a lot.
Gotcha.
And because they're fresh water, they're saying, we can't freeze like our box turtle friends. Otherwise we do a die if that happens. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they say, we're going to hang out under the water for maybe 100 days, maybe a little more. Who's to say? Okay. That's the energy that they bring to the table. Love that. Love that. Love that. They get oxygen, so everything's slowed down. Keep in mind, they're very, very cold. Their entire body is slowing down. Their metabolism is slowing down. Good for them. They're getting oxygen from the pond water.
They're doing some suspended animation. Bring it back now, y'all.
Yes. Bring it back now, y'all. Yes, they are. Sure, fine. Sure, fine. So they're the water's moving across them. They're like they're taking the oxygen from the water, and it's moving across their body through surfaces that are flush with blood vessels.
Yummy.
So what do you know about cloacal respiration?
Are you telling me that they breathe through their butts?
They sure do breathe
Amazing!
Through their butts. They breathe through their butts. Their bottoms, their tush, their dairy airs. They breathe through it. That's where they breathe through. Because it's around their buttocks region where there is the most blood vessels.
Yeah.
So that's where they're breathing from. They breathe through their butts.
I mean, we can eat through our butts.
Don't. Emily, don't ruin this for me. Don't ruin this for me. It's just turtles. I refuse to learn anything else about anybody else's butts except these turtle butts.
Butts are beautiful things.
Emily, don't even start with me right now. Don't even start with me. I will have words with you.
Oh, you're going to get mad at me?
I'm going to have words with you.
Yeah, you could like force feed people through their butts. That happens when people go on hunger strikes sometimes.
I don't want to know that, Emily. Emily, I didn't need to know that. This is new information, Emily.
You didn't know that you could eat through your butt?
No! I kind of knew that you could get, like, medication through your
butt. Well, that's why... Well, some people, when they want to get drunk really fast and they're really dumb, will put alcohol up their butt. No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Emily, no way in hell. Absolutely not. How dare you?
I mean, I've never tried to eat through my butt, but I just like have this, again, repertoire of knowledge.
I now know this. Why are we like this? Why is the body like this? I'm not going to talk about this anymore.
Well, because you got to be digesting. You got to be absorbing those nutrients all the way until the way out.
I mean, I know that. I just haven't thought about, like, I have that knowledge, but my mind refused to make that leap. My mind said, this much and no further will you think about this subject until this very moment.
Well, you know, butts.
Can we talk about, speaking though, like, of butts?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, so, the word, like, I'm going to mess it cloaca. Up now because I'm cloaca. They're cloaca.
Yeah.
Their butt. Functions as their like intestinal, urinary, reproductive moment.
It's an all-in-one.
And I just, it's an all-in-one, one-stop shop, baby.
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah.
One door.
Yeah.
Love that. I love that
efficiency.
Efficiency. I love that for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Like, who am I to step to them? I do appreciate that that word comes from the like the Latin word meaning sewage.
Nice.
And that sparked joy like almost no other. Okay, so now we know that turtles breathe through their butts, and that's pretty flippin' great. So as time goes on, the oxygen in the pond gets used up because the turtles are like stripping the pond water for oxygen. The like other fish or whatever else is down there, monsters, Loch Ness, whatever, is also using up the oxygen under there. So we have our painted, our snapping turtles and our painted turtles. They switch their metabolism so that they're no longer using oxygen. That is working great for them. The painted turtles' metabolism slows down by 95%. So they're doing like nothing.
Me. Every day.
And painted turtles also break down calcium from their shell to neutralize the like acid buildup in their muscles, which
makes sense.
Good for them.
Lactic acid going.
Getting that lactic acid, and then just in general, like before we get to this stage, because I'm assuming they're doing little to no moving at this stage. we didn't realize that, like, turtles weren't just, like, comatose under the water once it froze over. We were just like, oh, yeah, yeah, they're just, like, they're just floating there. They're donezo. They're just whatever. But it turns out they have, like, their, like, cardiovascular system and their nervous system are, like, fully functioning. So they will respond to light and temperature increases and, like, ignore other increases, because they're just, like, they're, like, they're alert. They're waiting for things to change so that they can be, like, all right, done with this no breathing thing.
Consider. Maybe the turtles are their most authentic selves when the lake is frozen and we can't see them.
They're, like, dancing and being, like, one with nature.
Well, maybe the way we perceive turtles is not who the way the turtles perceive themselves.
Say your, yeah. Yep. Yeah, Emily. Yeah. No, say your piece. Say your piece. Say your piece. Talk to me like you didn't just tell me about humans and what the bad human bodies can do. Act like this is now the new you. Yeah, no, do that again. Weave me a beautiful story, you monster. Whisper to me a sweet lullaby.
I'm just saying, maybe we project what we want turtles to be based on our assumptions of turtles. And really, the turtles need and love and enjoy the time when their bodies are frozen, because they get away from our prying eyes.
I mean, to be fair, like, everyone needs alone time and quiet time and meditative time to detach from our phones, to detach from media and expectations.
Okay, Kathy.
And to stop having FOMO, to live, laugh, love. Turtles need to break away.
I'm just saying, maybe.
Say it, Emily.
I mean, listen.
I'm fully listening right now. I double dog dare you to say your piece. I double dog dare you. I triple dog dare you to speak your truth in this moment.
Maybe we put some unrealistic expectations on our turtle friends, and really, all they want to do is float half frozen, breathing through their butts. And that's okay.
Listen, they are not special. So do I. So do I, Emily.
If I could just float in water and breathe through my butt, that would be all I did.
Are you kidding me? I would not come back up.
You literally are a swimmer.
I thrive. You thrive at the bottom of my nasty chlorinated pool. That's where I want to be.
Wow.
So the last thing I'll leave you with is this quote from Jacqueline Litzkus.
No, Claire, before you did that.
I have to get out of this space.
I'm just saying, do you think that you have a fuller understanding of turtles now that you know they breathe out of their butts?
I do. Feel like I have a better, I don't know everything there is to know about them. Because we only really, like, got that they were, like, that they were still, like, they weren't comatose. We only fully realized that they weren't comatose in about 2013. Like, it is very recent that we were, like, oh, they're not just, like.
Listen, we only know what we observe, but that doesn't make what we don't observe as real and authentic as what we do. Claire's so mad at me right now.
There's moments like this where I just get so mad that your sound quality is so good. So I know that everybody else had to hear that in, like, HD definition, that gentle caress that made me.
I'm trolling you about
so mad. So mad.
People are gonna be like, Emily doesn't respect Claire's bit, and I'm like, I don't.
So hateful.
Okay.
No reason.
I'm just trying something new because people apparently, and by people I mean you, get mad when I come in with cursed facts. So I'm like, what if I, like, try to do a positive
sabotage
affirmation?
What if you just sabotage?
What if I sabotage it with a positive affirmation? And no, we don't like that either. What am I supposed to do? Not talk?
Okay. All right. So I have nothing further to say about that. I just want to finish with
my quote. She's got her Medicaid voice.
I just want to finish.
She's so mad at me.
Emily, it's all I want to do is finish with this quote.
Oh, I better find a would you rather while you do this.
Please, God, do it. Okay, this last quote that I will leave my friends with, and it's by Jacqueline Litzgitz, an ecologist, who said, these are animals. Now, I'm sure she said this much more, like, chill. Like a chill fact. But this is the thing that I'm bringing to it, okay? These are animals that breathe with lungs. They breathe with lungs. And they cannot get a breath of air for half their lives. I think that's absolutely wild. The I think is absolutely wild is that's my takeaway. That's my energy. I think it's great. I love that turtles breathe with their butts. I love that their, like, bodies are so absolutely wild. And I love that they have, like, fully functional little lungs. And for half their lives, they're just butt breathing.
Do you want to do a would you rather?
I would love to do a would you rather, please. The more I think about the eyes, the sadder I get. Continue.
Okay.
Yes.
Would you rather sing everything you say or dance as a mode of transportation instead of walking or running? This is from the Would You Rather subreddit.
Okay, wait. We're going to say that one more time.
Would you rather sing everything you said, or would you rather dance as a mode of transportation instead of walking or running?
Because my first thought was, I already sing a lot of the things I say.
Yeah.
But I also, like, love the sound of my own voice, and I'd be sad if I didn't get to hear my talk. And I feel like I'm a cumbersome person, so if the way that I, like, jazz hand through life was by doing a little two-step.
This is really tearing you apart.
It's really eating me up. I want to say dancing?
Is that your most authentic answer?
I don't know. I feel like I watched a lot of high schools. I watched a lot of musicals in high school.
Yeah.
So I'm really torn.
I think I would do dancing just because I feel like it would be such good exercise.
All right.
Built in, because walking, right, is not great exercise. But if I have to, like, shimmy my way down to the bus stop, and also no one is gonna bother me because I don't dance in a way that's, like, good.
What people will decide is quote-unquote good.
You know,
not everybody gets it.
Will look at me and be like, this girl is not okay. I shouldn't talk to her. And that's the energy that I want to bring to every interaction I have.
I don't know if you have this trouble, but something to do with my face or the way I walk through the world. Everybody wants to, like, come up and tell me stuff. No, people come up and they're like, we need to talk. And by talk, I mean, I'm going to communicate something to you. And when I say communicate something to you, I am talking about creepy old men who want to say weird things. And something about me screams, like, I am available. I am interested. And I want this situation to last over 5 minutes.
See, again, I think I just have an energy that people know. Like, whatever's going on, I don't want to be a part of it.
I wish. I've tried everything. Like, headphones in.
Dye your hair. Looking at my phone. Color.
You think bright color would help?
Yeah. Because it says, hey, look at me. But in a way that says, I have an opinion about something.
Also, I'm venomous. So
yeah.
Jot that down.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once I dyed my hair purple, no one ever tried to stop me when I walked across campus.
Ooh,
okay.
And
I just kind of kept that energy.
Okay, I could see that. I think I'm wondering why my brown hair communicates you're just a hometown girl who just really wants to have a slow conversation.
You want an old person to look at you and say, she might, I don't know how to express this, but it's like, this is a woman with opinions.
And maybe anger.
Anger, yeah. This is a woman who might be angry. And I think that's really all I want to portray is I'm a woman and I'm angry.
I think that's the dream. I feel like dancing would really, I think that's part of the appeal of the dancing thing, right? Of people will either be wow, it is her energy that she's bringing to the table is really weird. And I don't feel comfortable being your creepy old man towards her because her energy is kind of crazy. The rest of us, the rest of humanity, I feel would look at that and be she might have she might be a performing artist. What is it called?
Worst case scenario, someone gives me money.
Performance art. They're like, oh, is this a moment with performance art happening in it? And I feel the natural tendency when seeing performance art is you do look away because you do want it to be over sometimes, even if it's really good.
Yes.
And it's just because it's stressful. It's a stressful social situation to be in.
But I want that.
But if you're the person doing it, see, now I'm seeing the appeal. Mm-hmm. If you're the person doing it, then you just have everyone who's averting their gaze and yes,
boom,
don't acknowledge I exist.
But I can't go up to my boss and be like, can you give me a raise? No, my life's over. You know what I mean? No one's going to listen to this podcast if I'm singing all of my cursed facts. Or maybe they would. Maybe that's a show.
Maybe in next episode.
Next episode's the musical episode. We've created something. This episode might be the most off the wall we've lost our minds episode yet.
I think that could be true. I felt like we all two of us.
Or three. You, me, the FBI agents watching us with binoculars.
Yes.
Hey, Paul.
Greg, I'm going to need you. You're a little close. I need you to step back from the window.
Monica, why can't an FBI agent be a woman?
What? Monica.
Why can't our FBI agent be a woman?
You have a whole team. I only have Greg.
I have a whole office building.
So you have a Monica. I only have Greg.
Let's
stop being mean to Greg because he's doing the best he can, except, God, just please get... Stop. I will get out the spritzer. Stop.
I know.
It's yes, I have no privacy, but also, I do have a personal space boundary.
Yeah,
at least 3 feet away from my window.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, just writing notes.
But we sure do have to. So let's let people know where they can find us. If you would be so kind as to email us any suggestions that you have for both a more positive note that I bring or a more challenging note that Emily brings, or a would you rather, just put Emily or Claire or a bad thing or a good thing in the title. Get creative. I don't care. And email that to chaosconsidered@gmail.com. You can follow us at chaosconsidered wherever, Instagram and Twitter. Twitter, our handles is spelled just slightly wrong because it has to be because the other thing was our actual Chaos Considered was taken. But it doesn't matter. If you look up Chaos Considered on Twitter, we will pop up. It'll be great. And... you can find our other episodes. I mean, you're listening to an episode, so I'm assuming you could find where our other episodes are, but we're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and yes. SoundCloud and all that jazz.
And make sure you like and follow us because we really appreciate it. leave. We are officially up on iTunes, as Claire said. So leave us a review, only if it's nice. Please be kind.
Only if
it's
I'm gentle.
Please be gentle. And I know. Last week we made a bold assertion that we were not going to talk about friend of the podcast, Maddie. But Maddie did leave us our first five-star review. And so we wanted to say a big thank you to Maddie for her very kind review. You know, she really talked about how I upset her viscerally. And I really, that's just what I'm here to do. That's my life's work. So thank you, Maddie, for your kind words. Like, follow, subscribe, you know.
Share with friends.
If you like it, hopefully after this episode, Claire's mic quality might increase. Who knows? Things might be getting a little bit more fancy. So, you know, next episode might be the perfect episode to introduce to a friend.
Perfect. I'm so excited.
Wow. Amazing.
Are you ready to sing your way through life, Emily?
I'm always singing my way through life.
Yeah.
Goodbye, lads. I want to eat with my butt.